Welcome to Akhatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhatra AI. Today, we're diving deep, and I mean really deep, into a pretty challenging work. It's The Piano Teacher, or Die Klavierspielerin, by Elfriede Jelinek, who won the Nobel Prize back in 2004.
Yeah, and Jelinek, well, she's known for this incredibly fierce feminist critique. This book isn't just telling a story. It feels more like she's taking a scalpel to Austrian society, specifically the hypocrisy around women, sexuality, ambition, all that.
It's definitely harrowing. There's no way around that, but so important. We're basically going to try and map out this psychological freefall in Vienna. We follow Erika Kohut, see how she gets so damaged and how everything just disintegrates. Patriarchal pressure, family stuff. It's intense.
And it's not just about her, is it? It feels like Jelinek uses Erika's tragedy to say something much bigger about the culture itself.
Exactly. It's an indictment. Okay, so let's set the scene. Erika Kohut. She's 38. She's a piano teacher at this really prestigious conservatory in Vienna. And Vienna itself.
Right.
It's almost like another character here, right? All that high culture, the music, the perfection.
Right, but it's masking something brutal underneath. That's the key.
The sophistication hides violence.
Precisely. Vienna, this city obsessed with music, becomes the stage for this moral and psychological horror. And a lot of that horror starts right at home for Erika.
Ah, the mother.
Yes. Jelinek shows Erika trapped in this incredibly suffocating, almost infantilizing relationship with her mother. It's completely codependent.
They even sleep in the same bed, the book mentions.
Yeah.
It's described as a toxic, possessive love. But honestly, it sounds more like, well, a jailer and her prisoner.
That's a perfect way to put it. The mother isn't just, you know, overbearing. She embodies this whole cycle of generational trauma. She's pushing her own failed artistic dreams onto Erika, demanding perfection.
Crushing Erika's own life in the process.
Totally. It's like Erika's life is just a proxy career for her mother.
Which brings us to that paradox Jelinek highlights so starkly. The piano is her prison, but it is also her only means of expression. How does that work? How can the prison also be the escape hatch, sort of?
Well, think about the language she learned. It was a language of discipline, control, perfection. The piano demands that.
Okay.
So she's brilliant at it. Her talent is undeniable. But it's completely tied up with the control her mother and the conservatory impose on her. The piano gives her this rigid structure where she gets recognition, but that very structure stops her from experiencing anything messy, anything human, like love or real desire.
So the public Erika, the controlled one of the conservatory, that's just a facade.
Completely, a veneer. And behind it, there's this terrifying private world where all the tension just explodes.
It's the double life. Let's get into that. How does she try to reclaim any sense of self?
Well, during the day, she keeps up that stern, aloof act. She gets her sense of superiority by being cruel sometimes, intellectually bullying students, or there's that shocking bit where she puts glass in another girl's coat pocket.
Wow. That's aggressive.
Pure rage directed at anyone who seems to have the youth or the freedom she never had.
And then at night.
At night, the mask slips. She becomes this secret voyeur, visiting peep shows, spying on couples in the park. It's a desperate search for connection, maybe, or just feeling.
And the self-harm?
Yes. The self-mutilation with a razor blade. It's incredibly disturbing, but Jelinek presents it as this perverse attempt to feel something, anything real, to have control over something when her whole life feels controlled by others.
That quote really hits hard. She cuts herself because it is the only thing she owns, the only decision that belongs entirely to her. If everything else belongs to her mother or her art, the pain is hers alone.
It's a terrifying kind of ownership.
Okay, so into this really tightly wound, fragile world steps Walter Klemmer, the student. He's talented, young, confident.
17 years old.
Right. And he becomes infatuated with her. How does the novel portray him? Is he just another bad guy, or is there more to it?
Klemmer is definitely the catalyst. But he's not just some random romantic interest. He kind of embodies the entitled, aggressive masculinity of that upper-class Viennese world.
Okay.
His interest starts as, you know, admiration for her talent, her control. But it pretty quickly turns into this need to conquer her, to break through her aloofness. Her resistance becomes a challenge to his ego, his sense of male power.
So his attention forces her to confront the gap between her public self and these these really distorted private desires she had.
Exactly. It throws her completely off balance. It accelerates the whole unraveling process because her inner script, the one she controls, is about to clash head on with this unpredictable external force.
And that clash really brings out the power dynamics, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. As Clemmer pursues her, Erica doesn't react like you'd expect. She starts playing these aggressive mind games, testing him.
Like what?
She spits in his face at one point. She physically attacks him during a recital. It's like she's trying to provoke him to see if he'll become the dominant aggressor she sort of needs him to be. But on her terms.
She wants to control the script of her own submission.
Precisely. She wants power, even in degradation, by dictating exactly how it happens.
Which leads to the letter.
The letter, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the absolute turning point. She sends him this incredibly detailed 4-page typewritten letter.
Typewritten. Very clinical.
Very. And it lays out these explicit sexual fantasies. Submission, bondage, violence, but crucially, without any affection. No emotion, just the act.
It's probably the most honest she's ever been, in a way.
It is. Utterly raw self-disclosure. But it's a total miscalculation, a fatal one.
Because Walter, he's horrified, right? Even this arrogant kid.
He's disgusted. It's the coldness, the contractual nature of it, the lack of any romantic pretense. He calls her sick.
And that rejection just shatters her fantasy.
Completely. She wanted this controlled, almost theatrical sadomasochism where she was the director. But Walter refuses to play that part. He sees the letter as an insult, a challenge to his dominance.
So his wounded pride takes over.
Yes. And that leads to the catastrophe. He shows up at her apartment, forces his way in, and he attacks her sexually, physically, but it's chaotic. It's not scripted. He basically throws her fantasy back in her face, twists it into this horrifying parody to just utterly dominate and humiliate her. It's raw power, not the controlled scene she imagined.
And the ending, it offers no comfort at all.
And Jelinek doesn't do comfort. Afterwards, Erica is just broken. She actually packs a bread knife, walks towards the conservatory.
Is she going to confront him?
It seems like it, but then she sees him later just laughing with friends, totally untouched by it all, and she just gets it. Her complete powerlessness. The script is gone.
So what does she do?
She turns the knife on herself, stabs herself in the shoulder. Yeah. It's this final, desperate, almost pathetic act of self-harm. Then she just walks home alone. The end.
Wow. Okay. No catharsis there.
Mm-hmm.
So let's zoom out. What's the bigger message here? What is Jelinek telling us about society through this awful story?
Well, the main target, I think, is how society, especially that kind of repressive society, destroys female sexuality. Repression doesn't make desire go away. It just twists it into something self-destructive, something perverse.
Like that quote you mentioned earlier, she's a woman who has been trained to be perfect, and perfection is a form of death.
Huh.
It feels like Jelinek is saying that these ideals, artistic perfection, female perfection, they're actually anti-human. They starve you.
Exactly. They're incompatible with actual life. And that ties into the theme of power and possession. That's the only way Erica and Walter know how to relate.
So real connection, real love is impossible.
In their world, yes. Jelinek used to say, love is nothing but the desire to possess completely, and possession is the death of love. It was always about domination, never partnership.
And it's fascinating how high culture, the art world, becomes part of that oppression. It's not just Vienna the city, but art itself.
Absolutely. Art as oppression. The relentless pursuit of excellence becomes a form of psychological violence. The piano itself isn't liberating. It's an instrument of torture, discipline, imprisonment for Erica.
It represents everything holding her captive.
Right. And there's also this idea of linguistic violence.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the words for healthy emotion, the only language they really understand is
violence.
Yeah. That observation that violence is the only language they understand because it is the only language they have been taught. It links her personal trauma directly to a failure of the whole system, the whole culture.
Okay. Given how brutal the story is, we have to touch on Jelinek's style. The way she tells it is just as harsh, isn't it?
Relentless is the word. She uses this third-person perspective, but it's so clinical, so analytical, almost ironic. There's zero sentimentality, no easy empathy for Erica.
Why do that?
I think it forces us, the readers, to be objective witnesses. We can't just feel sorry for her. We have to critically analyze why this is happening. It prevents easy answers.
And the language itself,
mm-hmm.
It's jarring. She mixes this really high-flown, intellectual, musical language with descriptions of the most base, degrading things.
That contrast is central. It highlights the massive gap between the sophisticated surface of Vienna, the music, the philosophy, and the barbaric reality underneath. The language mirrors the hypocrisy.
And the structure, too. Fragmented, repetitive.
Yes, the fragmented sentences, the recurring images of cutting, coldness, being trapped. It all mirrors Erica's own broken, contained psyche. The form absolutely reflects the content. It's brilliant, but punishing.
So the lasting impression isn't meant to be uplifting. It forces you to confront how oppression gets internalized, how it fuels self-destruction. Vienna's beautiful surface just hides the rot.
Exactly. It makes you question any society that values appearances, perfection, control over actual human freedom and feeling.
The novel's legacy, then, really lies in showing how those societal pressures become this internal engine of destruction, making simple ideas of redemption seem, well, naive.
It's a chilling, vital look at how the demand for perfection almost guarantees destruction. A tough read, but one that stays with you.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.